It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. Now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you, Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. Steven is running the shop because apparently the shop went 24 hours last night. But Elliot Serrano's here.
I volunteered to run the shop. Steve said I couldn't go anywhere near the shop. So I don't know how to take that.
I don't know. Yeah, you have to sit here with me and be supervised.
Well, okay. I mean, just because one time I went into the back, got undressed, and started rolling around in the big action figure pile, you know, they're going to hold that against you.
I feel like you could end that story with, I went in the back. Just nothing good ever happens in the back. That's what I learned by working retail. I got my first retail job at Bulletproof Comics in the 90s, and then obviously Steven owns Chimeras. Like when you don't work in a store and you see them go in the back and you think it's this magical land, it's just the shittiest, biggest closet you've ever seen.
It is, but it's got that one-way mirror that Steve peeps through. I don't know. I'm not supposed to talk about that, am I? Sorry, dude.
Yet. You know, okay, we're a minute in. That's not supposed to happen. I don't know that we have a topic.
Okay, hold on a second. Here's this whole thing where you text me first thing in the morning. Hey, dude, you want to come by, talk about Batman versus Superman?
No, I texted you last night.
Was that last night?
Yeah, because I had five beers when I texted you.
Oh, there we go.
But yeah, we can talk about...
I saw AM. I saw 8, but I didn't see AM or PM. There, I don't know when it went through.
Ah, there you go. I was on the train.
Let's talk about Batman versus Superman. We're still angry. I'm like, okay...
The world is still kind of angry. But then again, when we were making coffee, we talked about three other things. I was like, well, we could talk about that. So we might talk about everything.
We can talk about everything, but...
I would say Batman vs. Superman is still out, still angry. but one of the interesting things is how this... It's becoming controversial in a way that, like, the election is controversial. Oh, where people are digging on their side of it. And this is... And people want to know updates because I feel like no one's really processed what they've seen. So we're getting reports every day of how much this movie is made to justify either side of the argument. I've never seen that with a movie before.
Well, my question for you, John, is this. You cashed that Disney check yet?
No.
You know, the one that they send you for ripping the movie?
I wish I had a Disney check.
Because you're the critic, you know. You are part of the media.
I am. The media elite.
The media elite.
The liberal media elite.
Or the MSM, mainstream media. You know, you're part of the mainstream geek media. And Disney wanted this movie to fail so bad, they were sending all these checks out.
Yes.
So
if I got a check, I would not have texted you from the train because I would not be leaving my house during the week. I would record daily podcasts for Disney because I believe that Batman vs. Superman is not good.
But that you're right. But people dug in, like really dug in, and it's gotten kind of
Why is that? Is it because we're worked up with the whole Bernie Sanders, Trump, Ted Cruz that like we feel like that's the way to approach the media? That's the way to approach the internet right now, or is this movie that much of a cat? I mean, we've had superhero movies that people didn't like. We had Fantastic Four like 6 months ago.
Yeah. Well, what? Maybe DC just can't release movies during an election year. Maybe that's just what we're learning right
Every
now.
Every 4 years they take a break.
Yeah, they got to stop. Nothing that big.
That's actually, well, the Nolan movies, Dark Knight and Dark Knight Rises, both election years.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, Dark Knight's 2008, Dark Knight Rises 2012.
Well, yeah, but that
And
was...
Dark Knight Rises was controversial when it came out. People were on one side of the other. I like it. I think there's holes in it, but... I still really like Tom Hardy as Bane.
Yeah. I mean, The Dark Knight Rises is one of those movies where if you watch it, you sit down and you binge watch Begins, Dark Knight, and Dark Knight Rises, then you Rises makes that much more sense to you. But if you haven't seen, and you have to see Batman Begins with the Dark Knight.
You don't really need Dark Knight to watch Dark Knight Rises, but you do need Batman Begins.
You do need Batman Begins.
Because it's all about Ra's al Ghul.
Right. And there's all this thematic bookending that's going on. Because I remember watching, I went home, it was like a week after seeing Dark Knight Rises and being a little bit let down by it. But then sitting there watching Batman Begins on cable, I'm going, oh, that's what Nolan was doing. He started this here, and that's why he ended that there. And you see how he's drawing these thematic through lines on the trilogy. So I can, with that, it's like you step back and you get a little bit of perspective, and maybe it's not, you know, again, you can say it's not as bad. My problem is I cannot sit down and watch Man of Steel again. I'm not going to watch Man of Steel again to appreciate Batman.
I tried it about a month ago. I got that NECA Christopher Reeve figure they did, and the only way to get it was to order it through Toys R Us, and they would send you Man of Steel on DVD for free.
Oh, because they don't like you?
Yeah, well, they had... they tied to movies, because you could also get a Heath Ledger Joker and get Dark Knight, or you could get an Adam West Batman, and I think you get the 66 movie. So Superman, instead of giving you the Richard Donner Christopher Reeve Superman, which that figure is, and people like... they send you Man of Steel.
Because they have all these leftover DVDs. They don't know what to
exactly.
do with them. They're like, we got to give these away.
So first, when it showed up, I was mad that it wasn't a Blu-ray.
Right.
Because what year is this? And then it was Man of Steel. And I was like, well, I never bought it. And we were going to, Ben and I put it on because to get ready for Batman vs. Superman. And we didn't make it.
Yeah.
And it was maybe the second time I saw it. I rented it from Netflix. I didn't go. And when we did the show, it was Steven and Jimmy Ferrano had gone, and they just explained it to me. And I was like, I don't want to see this. that was that episode. And then I finally rented it, and I didn't like it. And then I tried watching it again. And when Kevin Costner walks into a tornado, so Superman, who has super speed, doesn't have to sacrifice his secret identity to save him, I just turned it off.
Right.
Smallville, for 4 years, had Clark running around with no costume, but he was so fast no one could see him. But that was enough reason to kill Pa Kent.
Again, my issue has always been with Man of Steel, not the choices they make. I mean, if you want Pa Kent to die as a Kansas farmer killed in a tornado, fine. But you've got to set it up better than that.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to do something better than that. The dog gets away, which I was pleased. I guess I'm pleased the dog survives.
Right.
Well, and that Pa dies because he has to save the dog.
Yeah, but that's like Independence Day.
Yeah.
When the dog jumped away from the laser blast, I was like, oh, this movie's not going to do anything real.
Yeah, again, it's Superman, but...
yeah.
Again, super speed, laser eyes. it just speaks so much to kind of the poor storytelling of the film. Because if you're sitting there and you're going, wait a minute, that makes no sense. Because the way you set up the rules of this character... I, sitting here right now, can think of five different ways that doesn't need to happen.
Yeah, and that's something that happens in Batman vs. Superman.
There's a lot of that, yeah.
There's a huge plot point of a bomb that's next to Superman that he can neither see with his X-ray vision nor hear with a super hearing.
Right. Or there are two times when Batman uses a kryptonite gas pellet on Superman. And the first time, I can see Superman falling for it because he doesn't know what this is. He's like kind of cocky, like, oh, you tried shooting me with this shit? Come on, really? I'm Superman. And I'm going, okay, he was startled and he was in the process of breathing. So he breathes in some of the
kryptonite. He was in the process of breathing. Right. It was that moment of the day where he breathes.
Right. So I'm like, okay.
It's like, you know, you poop once, yeah. You breathe once.
But then the second time he gets hit again and he breathes the kryptonite dust in again. I'm like, hold on a second. We just saw him fly. We're going to see him fly up into space. He was in space in the last movie. He's going to be in space again. Why is he breathing in this crap? He doesn't need to breathe it in. So I was like, oh, God. It's like at one point, Snyder remembered how fast and powerful Superman is. And then he had to like fudge with the rules to give Batman even a chance, which I'm sorry, guys. Everyone talks about
oh, yeah, well, in The Dark Knight Returns, Batman beat Superman because, you know, he's smarter and he had the kryptonite bullet and blah, blah, blah.
I'm like, okay, you realize it wasn't Batman by himself. In Dark Knight Returns, he had half the freaking Justice League on his side, too. He also had Oliver Queen.
He had whoever survived, and he had his armor plugged into the direct power source of the city.
Of the city.
And this, his eyes light up, so there's power.
Right. Ben Affleck's eyes just do light up.
I mean, well, here's a question. It was confirmed this week. As I said, there's been a lot of news about Batman vs. Superman this week, which is probably why it's the only movie we're going back to 2 weeks in a row. We didn't do this with Star Wars. Star Wars, we did one on every trailer, but like after we saw Star Wars, an hour was enough.
I don't remember you inviting me for that one, because I would have kept that baby going. I would have been back every week to talk The Force Awakens. By the way, DVD's out, or the Blu-ray's going to be out.
Yeah, you got an advanced Blu-ray.
I got a copy of it.
And it's good?
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it quite a bit. The documentary that they do for it is fun. It does forget one major event that occurs on the filming. You would think they would talk about the Harrison Ford accident on set of The Falcon, but they don't. But the Harrison Ford is kind of like the midpoint, like the centerpiece of the documentary, because we know what happens with Han Solo. So there's a lot about it. And I'm going to tell you, it's emotional. It is emotional. Cool. When you get to the end of it, it is quite emotional. So it's fans are going to enjoy that. There are a couple deleted scenes that, you know, they've already been posted on YouTube that you can see.
Yeah, this is the first movie I've seen where they posted the deleted scenes first. Yeah. Usually people rip them, but we're in this weird place where discs are starting to go away.
Yep.
But when it's a big movie, people are still interested in the bonus footage. So it's like they're trying to kind of like straddle those two worlds.
Well, Disney's already made the movie available digitally. You can download it now on a digital.
Yeah, so on Amazon. Yeah. You can buy it directly on Amazon or on iTunes.
Right. But if you want the Blu-ray with all the extras and stuff like that, then it's going to cost. Then that way you have to wait a bit.
I do. I can't. There's going to come a day where I'm going to have to quit Blu-rays, and I don't know when that's going to be.
But you know, Blu-ray is probably the last of the really solid type
physical media. Yeah,
you know, because after that, it's all going to be digital downloads. And if anything, remember when they tried for a while releasing music on USB USB sticks?
All right, yeah.
You know, and instead of having CDs or whatever, just plug that baby into your player or on an SD card. But that didn't quite take off.
No, well, it's all about the delivery system.
Yeah.
But my worry about digital media is it's so proprietary based. I mean, every streaming site, they can pull it down whenever they want. Like, I sold all my 30 Rock DVDs because it's on Netflix. But I realized there's going to come a day, probably not soon, because now they produce Kimmy Schmidt. But there'll come a day where they take 30 Rock off and, hey, now I don't have 30 Rock. In a way, we're going back to television of like, hey, I can watch this when it's on, and now it's not on and I can't watch it. And even places that you buy, like iTunes, you can only watch it through iTunes, so you have this one program that can play it. You know, it's not a piece of hardware where I can put a disc in a Sony or a Panasonic or a Samsung. I can go to your house and watch it. I can go to the store and watch it and just take that disc around.
That's a good point with that. And considering that so much old media is even coming back, too, we've got...
people love records again.
Records, LPs are coming back, turntables.
I rebought my whole comic book collection. I don't know why.
I get rid of my comic
book. I BitTorrented everything.
Really? Yeah.
Like 10 years ago. And then I saw them cheap. They used to be cheap, and then that stopped. Yeah. Like, I found all my favorite runs of comics in, like, 50-cent piles. So I was like, I'll put these back together. And then after a couple of years, I had to stitch the two runs together. And I have more comics than I've ever had.
See, that's I have about a dozen long boxes that I'm going to have to divest myself of.
Yeah, I have like 30.
Really? Yeah, and it's only because my home office only has so much room. Otherwise, I would have filled it up. And I went digital. And it's amazing how quickly my Comixology and Marvel accounts fill up with books.
Really?
You know.
I've done it a couple of times, mostly like motion comics and like exclusive stuff, but I never got into it as a rhythm. I think partially because Steven owns the shop here, so it's like I want to support him.
Yeah.
That's another thing that led me back to floppies, because I was buying hardcovers and trade paperbacks, and I was not buying monthlies anymore. I was BitTorrenting them, because Comixology wasn't really a thing yet.
Right. Yeah, that's my thing too. Is I'm less into the monthlies now as I am into the trades.
Yeah,
I'm a trade waiter. Although that's a bit, isn't that what essentially watching a series on Netflix is now?
It is, because they say if you're not buying the monthly, it might not have sales good enough to make the trade. That's the argument against it.
Which is fine, but then what's the model in Europe with their trade books there? They don't have any monthlies there.
No, it's like Japan. It's like manga. They put out the book.
Yeah. Just a big book and da-da-da.
And we do that a little bit. I mean, Marvel and DC have those chapter ones and the Earth ones, but they're not what's driving the business. They're like weird ancillary projects.
Well, they need to, right now what they need to do is figure out if they want to, what they want to do with the freaking books, because it seems like they keep rebooting.
Yep.
All the time. DC is doing yet another.
Rebirth is coming in June.
Rebirth and... Marvel is...
Marvel's done it like every year for the last year.
All new, all different.
Yeah, because I have like 5 volumes of Spider-Man now. And there was one volume of Spider-Man until the mid-90s. And then there was a second one that in the early 2000s went back to being the first one. Because they did that where you bought issue 54 and then issue 500 after like a month. Geez. And then it's like every year. It seems like now when a new creative team takes over, everything just gets a new number one, which kind of breaks why I have long runs of comic boxes. Is I love having, look, I can have this month's Amazing Spider-Man, and it goes all the way back to, I think I'm in like 67. I'm in the John Romita Sr. run. I don't have a Death of Gwen Stacy, but I have. But I love that, like, you just keep going down and down and down, and you see the numbers changing, you see the eras changing, you're like, oh, now we're in the 70s. But it's still the same thing. And when you break it up every couple of years, it's like number one, number one, number one, then really doesn't matter. It's like having albums at that point. There's no, you know, it destroys the idea of this long continuity.
Then that's why you really should be thinking more, like you said, in the album format as used in Europe.
Right.
You know, you make these nice collections of these graphic novels, even hardcovers, softcovers if you want. I mean, let's be honest. We're writing this stuff, we're creating this stuff for the older collector.
Yeah, that's who's buying monthlies. It's just comics have been brilliant about never letting a certain generation go, which is basically us, the Gen Xers.
Yeah.
And then, you know, some of the millennials got into it in the 90s and stayed around. Like Steven. But for the most part, the new generation coming up, they don't really care, which is why digital opened up this whole new market. They were terrified that it was going to cannibalize sales and close comic book stores. And it didn't at all, because people who buy comic books want to buy comic books. People that want to read superheroes, yeah, they'll download it, but they're different people.
Right. And you need a shop that is welcoming and has good customer service to make people want to keep going there.
Right. And to make you aware of other things in the marketplace.
Right.
I mean, that's the strength of retail overall. You know, retail's not as healthy as it used to be, but the internet's great for knowing exactly what you want and getting it,
which is why you have this all this route back to Batman versus Superman.
Back to Batman versus Superman.
Because is it, what was the ones who were like fighting the most about it? This movie was made for me, the fan. This was a movie made for the quote-unquote the fans. And you have these quote-unquote fans, quote-unquote, who say, well, yeah, I can handle this with this movie. I like this interpretation of Batman and Superman. Then you had the other fans who said, no, that's not the Superman or Batman I grew up with.
Yeah, that's not my Batman.
It's not my Batman. And then
hashtag, that's not my Batman.
Not my Batman. Not all Batman.
Batman lives matter.
Bat lives.
Bat lives matter.
Okay, I am by no means belittling a very very important social movie.
No,
guys.
No.
Okay,
nor am I, but I do want to see the Jim Aparo dead Jason Todd image with hashtag Bat Lives Matter.
Bat Lives Matter. You know, not all Robins.
So, yes, all Robins. Yes.
Oh my God, I'm going to hell for this.
It's recorded so we can hear this
over again. But it gets me that you have this, as you said before, this entrenching, that this is what's important to me. And it's not even what kills me the most is that, not that that people get angry about it, but they're getting angry at other folks for not liking what they like.
Yeah, that's what we were saying about how people are getting in people are digging their heels in so doggedly over this movie. Of like, I was saying it on last week, I was trying to find a well-substantiated, good review of Batman vs. Superman. And on social media, which is not the place to look for well-thought-out, substantial reviews, all the reviews I read were like, I like this movie, critics should shut up. And I'm like, but why do you like this movie? And there was nobody going, well, you know, in this post, you know, war on terror world, this is what we have to do. And Man of Steel, you can see these threads coming in. Ben Affleck is bringing this to Batman. I didn't see any of that. I saw lots of articles the other way.
Right.
You know, because it's a flawed film. It's a majorly flawed film. That said, my question for you is, it's been confirmed this week that Ben Affleck and Geoff Johns have finished a Batman script for him. Which I'm guessing will get made.
I like it. I'm okay with it, actually.
I like it, too. I liked him as Batman.
I thought, you know, it's funny. I made fun. I jumped on the Batfleck hashtag in the beginning. But I will admit, I did that pretty tongue-in-cheek, because I thought Ben Affleck would be a good, at least a decent Batman here.
Well, he really, really cared.
Yeah, he did.
He clearly cared more than anyone in this film.
Oh, yeah. And the moment I heard that he was bringing his Argo scriptwriter on to help on this thing, I'm like, okay, you can see he wants something that he can feel proud that he's doing.
Yeah.
So I was really impressed with him. And, you know, overall, all the actors in this movie were pretty... We're good, but they just had the worst script handed to them.
Yeah, and pushed in weird directions from the director.
Yeah, they put too much trust in Zack Snyder. I mean, to me, Zack Snyder is a director who hasn't had his the reason he's not Michael Bay yet is because he hasn't had to deal with Sean Connery on the set of a movie. Famously, Michael Bay had to deal with Sean Connery on the set of The Rock.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, this was when a young Michael Bay was trying to make this movie with Sean Connery and Nicolas Cage, and the set reports were like, Sean Connery was giving Michael Bay crap all the time about things.
Yeah, Sean Connery's still at his peak in the 90s.
Yeah, and we're talking...
It's like post-Indiana Jones The Last Crusade, but before, like, Entrapment.
Correct. And then and he's talking about, you know, this doesn't make sense. And then, you know, just being really... giving his director a shit time. But you see that movie? The Rock is probably Michael Bay's best movie.
Yeah.
You know, I mean...
I'm not elevating it by saying
no,
that.
No, you're right. But I remember going, oh, see, this feels very Temple of Doom. Oh, there's some fun things here. I mean, the movie has this really cheesy ending at the end. You know, the cheesy climax at the end, but fine. But there, you can see where Sean Connery was trying to say, this is... where I have a problem, and this is what we need to do with this character, and so on, instead of getting lost in all the splody stuff and the cuts and all that kind of thing. I don't know if Zack Snyder has had anybody on one of his movies saying, look, this doesn't make sense. We need to work on this. This needs to be fixed.
Yeah, I think probably the closest person he had on that set was Ben Affleck.
Yeah,
because Ben Affleck's an Oscar-winning director.
Yes.
And that's one of the things I like about this about him doing a Batman movie is he's a decent actor. I don't really care about him one way or another as an actor, kind of like Tom Cruise or George Clooney. It's like, if they're in a good movie, I'll see it. If they're in a bad movie, I'll avoid it. But he's a really good director.
He's
a much better director than he is an actor.
I remember when I saw Gone Baby Gone, I was blown away by that.
And Argo's fantastic. And he can direct himself.
Yes.
Which is very, very hard to do.
Well, okay. Well, yeah, he was better in Argo than in The Town. I remember that.
Yeah.
But you're right. He is a very good... He's an exceptional director, just like Quentin Tarantino is way better director than an actor.
Yeah, people aren't hiring Quentin Tarantino to act in anyone else's movies, though. No. They are hiring Ben Affleck.
Right. So yeah, so I'm heartened by that. I will see a Ben Affleck Batman movie. That sounds like it's going to be fun. Because the whole thing, too, is I thought... Affleck and Jeremy Irons together were great.
Yeah, I did. My problem with that was I felt like Jeremy Irons was too close to Ben Affleck's age to be that father figure that you need Alfred to be. I thought he was good, but they seemed like coworkers.
Yeah.
And maybe that's a dynamic you want to explore.
Possibly. Although, just because they act close to the same age doesn't necessarily mean they're the same age. I mean, I know Jeremy Irons is much older than Ben Affleck. And these days, we're kind of hesitant to make older men. I mean, we're okay making older women seem frail and all that. But we don't want to make older men seem like they can't be capable of pulling off an action role like Indiana Jones 5, which is going to be coming out in 2019.
Yeah. So, well, and we can totally talk about that.
So... Which, really? Okay, so let's switch gears.
Yeah, I'm, look, yeah. Okay, happy with a Ben Affleck Batman, now a 50 Indiana Jones with Harrison Ford. That's, honestly, those are the only two movies I should talk about. Because there'll be Marvel movies, I'll go to that. Key and Peele have a movie, I'm going to that. But really, Indiana Jones and Batman are coming again.
Well, then you know, come Civil War next month, there are going to be tons of comparisons made. Well, just like
I was
comparing Man of Steel and Thor, Thor the Dark World. I thought Thor the Dark World was a better Superman movie than Man of Steel.
Yeah,
but
although there's something about those Thor movies, they do not reward rewatchability.
No,
I bought both of them, and they're like the only Marvel movies I don't really watch. Like I put them on, and I was like, oh yeah, and about halfway through, I kind of want to turn them off.
Well, the moment Tom Hiddleston is off screen, you're like, oh, all right. You know, you want to see more him and Chris Hemsworth together. That's about it.
Which is why Dark World, he just keeps showing up and for no real reason, because there were a lot of reshoots.
Yeah.
With Tom Hiddleston.
Well, you needed to see him. He pretty much carries the movie.
Yeah.
But Indy 5?
How you feeling? It's coming out, what, 2019?
2019, same year as Blade Runner 2.
It will be 11 years after...
Kingdom
of the Crystal Skull. And Kingdom of the Crystal Skull was like 17 after Last Crusade. So you almost have a break. You have a break of a decade again. So he's going from 60 to 70.
Well, he won't play 70. He'll probably play later 60s.
Yeah, it could. You know, they play with that timeline all the time. Right. I mean, Temple of Doom takes place the year before Raiders of the Lost Ark. Right. They play with that timeline as much as they want.
And Han Solo did not play 70s in Force Awakens.
Nah, he's more like 65.
Yeah, they were playing him more like in his 60s.
Yeah.
Right? Because in the Star Wars universe, once you hit 65, that's about as long as you live.
Well, somebody chops you in half with a lightsaber.
Chops you in half. You know, Qui-Gon, 65. Obi-Wan, 65.
A lightsaber is retirement in the Star Wars universe. It's like Logan's Run.
It's like,
happy birthday. Please step up.
Step up. Time for renewal.
maybe it's like Soylent Green when you get hit with a lightsaber. You just see like sunsets and classical music.
Maybe
that's what happens to Edward G. Robinson. He's lying in that bed and they just come over and chop. Which is why Charlton Heston was so upset.
Man, well, you take this. I'm never going to be able to eat a Star Wars Cheez-Its the same way again.
You're never going to be able to eat Soylent Green.
Well, I'm going to think it's Cheez-Its. They're made of Solo. Star Wars Cheez-Its are made of Solo.
Cheez-Its are made of MSG. It's MSG. Did you ever see that Saturday Night Live sketch with Phil Hartman doing all the different sequels to Soylent Green?
No.
It's around the time of like Chris Farley and Mike Myers. And it's this weird sketch where it's like came on probably like 12:40 at night where they're like, all right, just put it on. Where they were talking, John Goodman was in it. So he was hosting and he played the director of all of the sequels. And they were just turning people into other things. And they had one called Soylent White where the two people were typing on paper. And they're like, this paper's really great. And Phil Hartman would just run in with an ascot and go, Soylent White is people. And then they turned him into like cow poop. And they were like, it's a terrible future. We have to eat cow poop. That cow poop is people.
That's and actually then, a step up.
Yeah. And then the last one is they go, I think we've returned to the tried true formula and we've done Soylent Green 2. And it's my favorite job. And Phil Hartman just runs out and he goes, Soylent Green is still made of people. They didn't change the recipe like they promised. It's a 5-minute excuse to get Phil Hartman to do Charlton Heston. It's probably on Hulu.
No, that's frustrating. You can't find old SNL stuff on YouTube. It's all on Hulu.
That's the problem with streaming, going back to what we were saying before. I said there would be no topic and there isn't. Is is when Netflix started to really become a thing, and streaming became ubiquitous, and we were like, this is the way. Let's stop buying discs. Let's stop driving to Best Buy and get a disc and bring it back here. We'll just press a button, and there it is. What I didn't see coming, and I don't know if Netflix saw it coming, was that the competition would be so strong, that Amazon Prime and Hulu would come up and be like, well, I'm taking some of this, and I'm taking some of this. So there's no single repository online to watch stuff. Maybe YouTube, because stuff is ripped illegally. But Doctor Who this week, they were topical. This is what this week is. Doctor Who this week just moved from Netflix to Amazon Prime.
Amazon Prime. I think they thought they would find probably a greater base, reach out to a greater base audience than they had on Netflix, which, I'll be honest, though, I don't know.
I think it's all a matter of who's willing to pay.
Right.
I read an article this week about how the movie and television catalog on Netflix is actually shrinking because they, like any network, they don't care about stuff they don't own anymore. They're much more interested in creating the next season of House of Cards and Orange is the New Black and Kimmy Schmidt and Daredevil than they are keeping Doctor Who on. So it's like every cable network that starts. I mean, when Comedy Central started, they would show the Jack Benny program and the Blackadder and all of these obscure BBC shows. And then, you know, all of a sudden here comes The Daily Show and South Park. And now you don't have that anymore because there's so much more money when you own the show that, like, as a historian, you're like, I would love to see every episode of everything. But that's not – but if you're a content provider, that's not where your motivation is. So we're seeing these, like, things are just shifting all over. Saturday Night Live used to be on Netflix. And now I think it's like this decade is on Netflix. The rest is on Hulu.
I'd like to know why, if you don't have to ship it, you don't have to press it, you don't have to pay a designer to make your sleeves and stuff like that. Why is it if I buy something digitally exclusive, and let's face it, you can only get a lot of stuff digitally exclusive these days, why does it still cost as much as the physical product?
Because they know you were willing to pay that.
See, but that's...
It's just market.
I understand that, but don't you think you'd expand your market by making it a little bit less?
Sure. Yeah, but then you also lessen the perceived value of it.
I don't know, because every once in a while, Google does the bit where you can get... They'll do specials. You can get a movie or an album or something pretty much on Google Play. Either it's like for $5 for a movie.
Yeah.
Or I just got Michael Jackson's Thriller for free. It was like the Google exclusive... mix for a Thriller for free, and it sounds great. You know, you play it on the cloud, and you can download it to your device if you want. And I'm like, I'm not going, well, this isn't worth anything. I'm like, wow, this is really good. I feel like I got something very valuable in my collection now from them, and it kind of makes you appreciate it more, if you ask me.
Yeah. Yeah, but, well, and you do those promotions that you make it a loss leader because now you're like, Google Play is great. So when they want to charge you $19.99 for another one, you'd be like, yeah, I guess I trust them.
Suckers.
Yep. Welcome to marketing.
Oh, that's right. I forgot you do that stuff. Yeah, okay, kid. The first one's free, but the next one's going to cost you.
Yeah. And that's what, and I think that's where personally I love technology and I consider myself a bit of a futurist. I want to see where we're going. I think where we're going is going to be more interesting than where we've been. But it rubs up against the collector of me that doesn't want to let something go that I think was great.
Well, you know, the only thing that concerns me is when we start talking about living through the cloud exclusively. Okay, one of the reasons why it's going to be a while before people start doing exclusively their collections in the cloud, okay, is because if I go to freaking Galena, okay?
If I'm going to say Canada.
Canada, no. If I go to Galena, Illinois, okay, and I've got no signal on my phone, guess what? I've got no access to my cloud.
Right.
So I'm not going to get any of my music. I'm not going to get any of my videos or anything. I'm pretty much cut off from the world. Otherwise, if I carry a book or a CD player or something, I'm going to have it with me. And there's so many places we tend to get all caught up in how great our technology works. I can't stand when I'm on the friggin' metro going into work and all of a sudden my 4G's gone and there went all my music too. So we get all caught up in this, how the convenience of it and how much access people have, but not everyone has access. So that's kind of keeping it from getting to that saturation
point. Right. And what annoys me is that they've doubled down so hard on it is that you can't get a decent hard drive space anymore. They're like, yeah, you don't need half a terabyte, even though it'll fit in the same device. Like, yeah, we'll just give you 24 gigs. That's all you're going to need to run the apps to download everything from the cloud. And you know, the iPod was sold to me as you could have all your CDs in this thing. And the iPhone was sold to me as you could have your iPod and your phone in one pocket and not have to have anything else in your other pocket. And again, it goes back to the collector in me is like, I want to have it because I don't necessarily trust you enough. The cloud, I think, is an information bank. And they can charge interest rates if they want. They can fold if they want. They can go bankrupt if they want. They can change their fees if they want. They can take away products and add products if they want. It's not a closet. It's going to the bank.
I was going to skip on this Indy 5 thing to bring it with that, but did you hear about I'm trying to remember the name of the venture that's doing this, where it's first run movies at home.
Yeah.
I forgot what it's called, but it's like for $50, you can have a first run movie at home.
Yeah, for like 24 hours or something.
Yeah, for 24 hours. You can see it on your television if you have a big screen TV.
Yeah, it's like you have a Roku box and you have to pay a premium. I thought it was like a couple of $100. It was a lot more, but they would like stream a 4K version
to your home.
Yeah.
So you watch that first run movie at home legally, of all things.
Right.
I'm saying, wouldn't that be something if Disney decided to take Indy 5 and say, guess what? We're going to make this the first streaming exclusive. If you want to see this, you can watch it on the Disney app. You can stream it at home if you want, if you pay so much money. You can go to the theater if you want, because some people are going to want to go to the theater. You'll do the exclusive IMAX or 3D version in the theater. But everyone else, you know, bing, 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 you can stream it at home.
Well, that's exactly what CBS is doing with Star Trek.
The Star Trek, yeah.
Star Trek, they're going to show the pilot on CBS. And, oh, if you want the other ones, you can sign up for our CBS version of Hulu and just watch it there.
So moving in that direction, how is that going to, I don't know. It seems to me if you want to do something like that, you need that particular property. You need a property to be able to.
Oh, yeah. You need the big thing. Well, what broke DVD wide open was the Matrix, because DVD was a niche market. It was basically the new Laserdisc for a couple of years.
Right.
And then the Matrix came out like cheap, and it was this new movie that everybody was into, and DVD was a much better experience than VHS. And then they priced it low and they sold players.
Yeah.
To sell the Matrix. When I bought my Blu-ray player, in like 2008, so it was fairly early. I got Batman Begins with it because that was the big movie. And I got it before Dark Knight had come out, so it was the most recent Batman movie. So you do need that kind of big title to spearhead the new technology. So I could definitely see that happening. I could also see Disney doing it with Marvel even faster.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's Black Panther. Or, I mean, because Disney's already experimenting with Marvel on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing network with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Marvel's Most Wanted. And if Agent Carter comes back, Netflix, we've got Jessica Jones and Daredevil and Luke Cage. Why not do a movie? In fact, why not do a movie that you didn't slate yet?
Like 10 Cloverfield Lane, where you just drop it out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Like whenever Beyonce or Jay-Z drop an album out. Can you imagine Radiohead. That? Yeah, right. Yeah. Can you imagine, like, out of nowhere, Marvel says, guess what? Brand new movie. A Hellcat movie. Boom.
Yep.
Out of nowhere. Heroes for Hire. You know, boom. You didn't even know we were making it.
Now there's a John Bernthal Punisher movie.
Yeah.
Because we had the Punisher bomb twice, but you like John Bernthal, so let's just throw it out at you.
Yeah. We're just going to throw it in there. Boom. Yeah. And then see how that goes. Okay, so Marvel, if you guys decide to do this, we expect a little...
I see it with Marvel more than Star Wars or Indie, is that because that world is so vast. And there's so many stories. I always complain about how when you get to superhero movies, the third one is always kind of crappy. And I never understand why, because it's like you're dealing with a character who has literally thousands of stories that you can adapt. Thousands!
They have to be good stories, though.
Yeah. There's
a lot of crappy stories.
There's a lot. Yeah. Well, yeah, but they make that's why the third one's a crappy movie. But, you know, out of the thousands of stories that they've done on a character, there's hundreds of good ones.
True.
Like, you could do it three times. Maybe not five, but you could do it three times.
Well, you know, it sounds so easy, but yeah, you know, the creative process. Yeah,
well, it's like when the Avengers came out, I remember people were saying, that's it. We know how to do superhero movies now. They're all going to be great. Yeah. Every one of them is going to be great. And yeah. Now we've just seen Batman versus Superman. It was like when Obama was elected and people were like, racism is over. We got a black president. No one's racist anymore. And now it seems like we've got more racism than ever.
Well, come on. Let's be honest. Age of Ultron did take some of the bloom off the rose there.
Age of Ultron just was just like, hey, let's just make James Bond movies now. That's all I felt with, like, they're like, we're in this country and then we're going to have a big action sequence. And then we're going to go to this other country and have a big action sequence.
How many climaxes can you have in Kazakhstan? Like, everyone's in Kazakhstan.
Yeah, I think it was, maybe Kazakhstan is booming as a box office market like China.
We got a tax credit.
In China, they did that weird alternate cut of Iron Man 3. Where, like,
the Chinese scientist appears for another 3 minutes or
something. Yeah, the doctor has his own story arc just in China, where in Iron Man 3, he's like, hello, I'm a doctor. And then at the end, he takes out the shrapnel out of Tony's heart. Yep. But apparently in China, he's this international espionage guy where every 5 minutes he unlocks a door for Iron Man to get out of.
Tony, this way.
I have the answer.
That was not racist at all.
No, it doesn't sound anything like the Mandarin in the original Marvel superhero cartoons.
Oh, no.
Well, my best friend and I, we used to, at Blockbuster, they used to have the old 60s cartoons for free. And they had like a kid section where you could rent stuff for free.
Yep.
So we would buy 40s of Budweiser in college and just rent like any superhero cartoon we could find because it was like the days of Fox Kids. So you could see Batman the Animated Series and X-Men and that's it. No. Maybe reruns of Super Friends somewhere. So we would rent those, and we would always rent the Iron Man one, and just because the Mandarin was the most racist thing ever. And we used to say to each other all the time, every time they showed him, we go, ah, I am ah.
Oh, God. Yeah, it's been a while.
They're on YouTube.
Yeah. No, I love that. That really, like, that sort of that. It's almost today, if someone did that type of animation, we'd say it was flash animation. But
it's like motion comics.
Yeah.
You know, they did like Watchmen and the Joss Whedon X-Men where they just take the panels and like move the lips and have them move around. It was that, but they were literally like cutting a comic book.
Yep.
Didn't even look like the original art.
Probably somebody traced the artwork out of a comic.
Sometimes you could tell in some panels like one arm doesn't fit and then that arm moves.
You see the little like it's just a little. Namor's chest is one color and the arm is like a slightly different color. And wow.
Yeah, they, you know, Marvel has a long history of selling their license to anybody that wants it.
And all that can be found on the cloud.
Yeah. See, it's kind of coming back. I feel like I'm going to have to listen to this and figure out what to title it. It might just be an afternoon in the apocalypse with Elliot Serrano. Because it's been a blizzard 7 times outside on April 2nd.
Yeah, I've seen it coming and going. Well, no, this
not
this,
sticking.
No. This podcast has been kind of like that fight between Batman and Superman in the kitchen. Remember when Batman finally rips the kitchen sink off the wall?
Yes. And he hits literally hits everything in the kitchen sink. And for some reason, the kitchen sink hurts Superman.
Yeah, it's like, oh,
not a sink.
So you can call this everything in the kitchen sink.
There you go. Yeah. I'm trying to think if there's anything we didn't touch on.
No,
we touch on everything briefly.
Well, again, though, I would say the Blu-ray of Force Awakens is worth your money.
Yeah, I'll definitely buy it on Tuesday. Oh, the other thing I noticed about Batman versus Superman is it has changed the way we talk about the Batman movies in that I've seen a bunch of articles this week talking about how great Batman Returns is. Like people used to hate Batman Returns. People would acknowledge when the Nolan movies were out, people were treating the Tim Burton movies like they were Adam West and be like, these are just goofy and weird and we don't like them. And then slowly over the years, I think around the time Dark Knight Rises came out, people were like, okay, you have to appreciate the marketing genius of the 89 Batman. And in fact, when I got the Michael Keaton Batman, which came with the Christopher Reeve Superman is how I got Man of Steel. That one came with the 89 Batman, which had a new disc all about, there was a documentary about the marketing of the 89 Batman and about how that changed the way Hollywood looked at blockbusters and how they put the Bat logo on everything. And it was like the first movie to make $40 million in its opening weekend. And it taught them how to build an anticipation. And people always said, oh yeah, they owned the summer of 89, which was a year they went up against Indiana Jones, The Last Crusade and Ghostbusters 2. Granted, Ghostbusters 2 was horrible, but everybody went.
Yeah. And then, but the, and then, well, are we talking about Batman Returns?
But Batman Returns, people could still hate.
Yeah, because...
And I think even on the show, I've had people go like, Batman Returns is terrible. It's crazy. It's weird. And now I'm seeing all these articles about Batman Returns is really misunderstood.
Well, I remember Batman Returns had a huge open as well.
Yep.
But much like Batman versus Superman had that tremendous drop in box office the following weekend and then the week after that and then the week after that. So the marketing is only going to get you so far because you're going to get so many people
it'll give you the
anticipating
weekend.
It. Yeah. And now the it's like these theaters or these movie studios are kind of putting the cart before the horse. They're spending as much money on marketing a movie as they are on the movie itself.
Yeah, well, they said for this to do, for Batman vs. Superman to be a success, it has to make close to $1 billion.
Yeah, well, that's in Hollywood money, and there's not a single movie in Hollywood that's made a profit.
Right.
So, you know.
Yeah, when you come for your royalty check, that's what they tell you.
Yeah, though it is.
But it's also that Warner Brothers is banking everything on this because they've had a, they made Jupiter Ascending and Pan last year. Those were their two big movies, both bombs. They don't have Harry Potter ready to go. They finished The Hobbit. They need DC to be their franchise. And they put it, they're putting all the pressure on this movie to kick off these next 10 movies they want. And it might turn out that Suicide Squad turns around for them. Like Suicide Squad looks entertaining. They're reshoot. They're doing reshoots now to make
it funnier.
Make it funnier because they want to be Deadpool.
Well, why do the villains get to be funnier than the heroes?
Because there's less pressure on them. I think it's partially Deadpool, and I think it's partially in response to people saying Batman vs Superman is so humorless.
There were two jokes in Batman vs Superman,
and they both sounded like people were being assholes to each other.
Yeah, there were two jokes. I don't understand why.
One of them involved a jar of piss in the Capitol building.
Yeah, and another one was had to do with the capes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will say this one thing, and I will close on this.
Oh, are we done?
Well, I don't know. Yeah.
Oh, we got more time.
Okay. I felt like I'm in a therapist session, and any minute now, you're going to look at the clock and go, okay, 10 minutes, Elliot.
I thought this was going to be like some of the old Sesame Street records where they would do Ernie and Bert sketches, and then you just hear footsteps and a door close.
You're like, enough of that, Ernie. And you'd hear clunk,
clunk, clunk. And Grover would come in.
When Superman turns to Lois and says, I love you, that was like the first human moment of that character that they gave me in two movies.
That's his character arc. It takes him two movies to get to that point.
And I was like, oh, why didn't you give me more of this?
Yeah. Of course, he does sacrifice himself to do something that either of the other two superheroes could have done more easily and not have to sacrifice himself.
I kept thinking he's going to give it to Wonder Woman to do. Because Wonder Woman's already a badass.
And she's already strong and she knows how to use a spear. And she's not allergic to kryptonite. I said it last week, but I summed up that whole movie with, I know what'll stop, I'm kryptonite. Oh no, kryptonite! It's like, do you remember that Simpsons, we were talking about 90s Simpsons, with the one where they get the elephant, Stampy?
He was, yes.
There's a joke in that where Homer gets stuck in the tar pit. And he goes, don't worry, I'll just reach down and pull my legs out, and now pull my arms out with my face. I feel like that was Superman's plan at the end. I'll take the one thing that can kill me, and I will hold it close to me.
And on top of that, get skewered.
It also happens to him twice. Lois Lane finds him floating in a pool.
Yeah, jeez, dude.
Really? He's like a two-year-old with a toaster.
And a fork.
Spears the fork.
Zack Snyder. You know,
it's... Nobody's been able to answer this. So you're smarter than me. Maybe you can. As far as I know, Zack Snyder has had one hit. And that was like six movies ago.
300.
Yeah. And since then, he's made Watchmen that didn't do well.
Which is funny, though.
Sucker Punch that bombed. Man of Steel that underperformed for Superman Returns. Mm-hmm. But they think he's the guy who carried this whole torch. And I don't get why. Like, what's putting this guy up on this Michael Bay pedestal? Michael Bay had done The Rock and Armageddon and before he did Transformers.
And Michael, this is the thing. Michael Bay movies make money.
They do.
They all make money.
But Zack Snyder movies don't make as much money as Michael Bay movies, but they're treating him like Michael Bay.
Yeah. Well, there are only so many. Well, let's face it. There are only so many Michael Bays. I mean, think about it. Who are the other named directors that you think are going to deal with this sort of thing? I mean, there was a time I would have said, okay, well, Joss Whedon's not going to deal with it anymore.
No, he's done it.
He's done it. He's done. And you notice what's happened now with the whole thing with Marvel Studios, where he's pretty much pulled after the whole Edgar Wright thing.
Yep.
After finishing Age of Ultron, he's like, you know what? I don't need to do this anymore.
Right.
And he's pretty much pulled out. I
mean, they tend to burn out directors. Yeah. They burned out Favreau. Sony burned out Raimi.
Yep.
You know. So you're right. You have to be on a certain peg. Spielberg is not going to make a superhero movie.
No.
He has no reason to.
No.
You know, these guys that can make the, you know, David Fincher is not going to make one for you.
No. David Fincher has gotten screwed by so many studios.
Just Alien 3 alone.
Yeah. He will never put himself in that situation again where he's going to have a studio tell him, this is how you need to do things.
Right. And Marvel's been good about, basically, they take indie directors and TV guys. You know, James Gunn, Russo brothers, those guys they have the most success with. And then they get elevated to a certain level where somebody gives them a deal to not make one of their properties and they take it. You know, Favreau is basically an indie director.
Yeah, but Favreau even got himself to a particular level, and then he started getting screwed around.
Yep.
So it's like...
So now he's making Jungle Book.
Right. And he'll make money for that. He'll make money with it. It's a
big
Disney property.
Yeah, so we have Zack Snyder. But Zack Snyder, they just keep giving it to him over and over and over again. And we have David Ayer doing Suicide Squad. What has Ayer done before?
He's a screenwriter, though, right?
Is this his directorial debut?
I think he's done something smaller. I think he's known more as a screenwriter. And so fine. You know, hey, why not? I'm just going, who's out there? I mean, to answer your question about Snyder, if not Zack Snyder, who?
I don't know. You have these guys. I mean, look at the Harry Potter movies. You had really decent directors across the board on that. Warner Brothers. That's heavily licensed.
Alfonso Cuarón is not going anywhere near the superheroes.
No.
He did the best Harry Potter movie.
No, and they're not going to give it to Chris Columbus.
No, Chris Columbus likes too much control.
Well, Alfonso Cuarón did the one movie that doesn't really fit in that franchise. Well, like you kind of have to close.
It's the best one, though.
It's really interesting. But then the fourth one, it just goes right back.
Yeah, back to the old, to the Chris Columbus
to the formula.
Type thing.
Yeah, the Chris Columbus. And you hire Chris Columbus because he made Home Alone.
Right.
So you give him the little kids and then you get rid of them.
Right. Well, he did the first two. Right.
Yeah.
And then the movies matured. But again, I'm thinking you're just going to have to find some young auteur. Well, the guy who did, I'm forgetting his name. He did District 9 and he did
Blomkamp.
Yeah.
Neil Blomkamp. He wants to do that Alien movie, which is now not going to happen because Ridley Scott wants to make more Prometheus movies.
Right.
So, yeah, there's an interesting guy. I just don't get why we keep going back to Zack Snyder. It's like, okay, you let him make Man of Steel. But then why do you bring him back for two more movies, each one having bigger stakes and more pressure for the studio than the last? Man of Steel, it's another Superman movie. They made one 10 years ago and it didn't work and they walked away from it. So if that bombed, okay, we can walk away from this. But then it like did so, okay, let's give you everything. Twice, three times, because Justice League's going to be split in half.
Well, Zack Snyder is like that girlfriend who, all right, things didn't go quite the way you wanted. They were okay.
Nobody's perfect.
Nobody's perfect. And you want to break up, but you're like, God, what else?
I don't want to be alone.
What else is out there? Who else is going to put up with my shit?
Sam Raimi is not going to put up with my shit.
So, and then you're like, okay, this time it'll be better. We'll try it again. This time it'll be better. And then you go back and you start remembering why you broke up the last time. And then you're like, okay, no, this isn't going to work. This is it for sure. And then you go, oh, man, it's gotten even worse. I mean, the girls who were out there while we were together, now they've found new guys, and some of them are getting married, and they're looking good, and I'm, like, all by myself. So you're like, you know what? I'm going to go back to the old one, you know? And she keeps taking me back, so.
The thing is, in this scenario, you're not right.
Nobody's
so
right.
So neither is Warner Brothers.
There you go. There's your explanation.
You don't want to work for Warner Brothers in any capacity? Joe Dante.
No, let us.
Joe Dante just keeps making Looney Tunes like people care about Looney Tunes.
No, get Max Landis. He's really happy.
Oh, Max Landis. Yeah. Max Landis is another guy. He's like the screenwriter Zack Snyder.
Yeah, well.
He's making these movies that don't do well, and they keep giving him bigger and bigger things. Seems more of a social network presence than anything else.
Right. I think Max Landis would be DC's James Gunn.
I think he'd be DC's Kevin Smith.
DC already has a Kevin Smith.
Yeah, they have Kevin Smith. Kevin Smith, who was hawking Batman vs. Superman until this week.
And then
when he went on his podcast, he was like, you know, man, I don't like that Batman vs. Superman. I was like, oh, the check stopped coming, huh?
Yeah.
Because a month ago, you were gleefully nodding to Jeff Johns on ABC about how, or CW probably, about how everything was going to be great.
Yeah.
You talk about those Disney checks showing up.
Well, see, there you go. So you go back to that girlfriend because your friends are like, oh, man, it wasn't so bad, right? Come on, she'll do good for you this time. Oh, I saw that way she dressed this week. It's going to be great. So when you
those are bad friends.
Right? So when you got Kevin Smith telling you, go back, what are you going to do?
Kevin's going, man, Ben Affleck's going to be Batman. He's going to fight Superman. It's going to be awesome. And then it's a disaster. He's like, that wasn't no good. It never was no good.
You got no heart. Got no humor. Got nothing. Like, Silent Bob, just being silent.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm not a big Kevin Smith fan, but the fact that he created a character called Silent Bob who gets the biggest monologue in every movie, I guess that's the joke.
Well, they're good monologues, though. Yeah. I know every time I wait for that monologue in every movie.
I stopped going to those movies.
Oh, really? See, I rag on Kevin Smith, but he's actually made some good movies.
I don't know. I've always been disappointed. I think I stopped after Chasing Amy.
Red State is a really good movie.
Was it?
Yes. That is probably my favorite. After Dogma, and I love Dogma, because I grew up religious, and now I'm very questioning of religion.
Yeah, me too.
And that movie, it has
and George, all the George Carlin was in it, and at that point I was like, I don't know anymore.
About I mean, it's not a great movie by any means, but it is good. Although
I was listening to Fat Man on Batman, because he had great guests. He would have like Paul Dini and Kevin Conroy and Neil Adams, but it was like letting them get a word in edgewise is an issue.
That's Kevin Smith's thing.
The only one who could keep up with him was Mark Hamill.
Right. Oh, yeah. Well, and you don't cut off Mark Hamill.
No.
Mark Hamill.
Mark Hamill's got three stories for it. Because Mark Hamill's got Batman stories and Star Wars stories. He's like...
And everything stories.
Yeah, he's it's like a lightsaber made out of nunchucks.
I will say, my greatest moment on WGN Radio occurred last weekend when I got to talk about Mark Hamill's character in Jane Silent Bob Strike Back. And got to say the word cock knocker on WGN Radio.
That's pretty good because you just said it here and it means nothing.
So, Mr. Hamill, I just want you to know I gave cock knocker a shout out on WGN Radio, the mothership. You know, 35 states in America heard that. I don't know who should be more pleased, me or Kevin Smith or Mark Hamill.
So, we've done like a couple of backhanded compliments to things. So I think we don't need to do a greatest thing in the world, but Ellie, what are you looking forward to?
Well, Civil War, obviously. That's one thing everyone's looking forward to now.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
The problem is I by that weekend, hopefully I will have been moved into my new place and will be able to actually watch Civil War. Because Civil War comes out on my birthday. The day of my birthday.
Oh, nice.
That is so cool. I always thank Marvel for releasing movies on my birthday.
Yeah, that's a big week. That's the big opening weekend because that's like first weekend of May. I remember the Spider-Man movie is coming out then. My birthday is also in May, but it's towards the end of May. So I'd always see that movie again. Although my birthday was always when Star Wars came out.
Yeah,
Wars and Indiana Jones always came out on my birthday.
Yeah.
My birthday is close to Memorial Day. So it's like the first big movie comes out on your birthday. So that's it. So we own everything.
Pretty much.
We live in a solipsistic universe where major motion pictures are made for us to celebrate our birthdays.
Yeah. And why are you laughing? You sound like you're making a joke.
I feel like if that's true, my life should be going better.
No, that's what balances out. I mean, let's face it. You get that. That's like a huge thing to have. You got to give up a whole lot of other stuff. The universe is going, dude, do you want the really nice car or do you want the supermodel? Which one do you want? You can have one or the other.
That's true.
The Do you want the Maserati or the supermodel? Which one?
I'd have to see them both. Let's go to the showroom. I did the one thing I'm looking forward to now is actually in Rebirth is that John Romita Jr. is going to draw a Batman comic, and I've been waiting for this since he got to DC. Scott Snyder's going to write it.
Yeah.
Apparently, it's a Two-Face story.
Yeah, no, that killed me right there.
What, you don't like Two-Face?
No, just when John said when Snyder went on Twitter and talked about, well, the first arc's going to be about the villains. I'm like, I'm tired of the villains.
Yeah, but you know, Snyder's kind of avoided the villains. He's tried to make his own villains, and he's done these long stories about the Joker. Mm-hmm. He hasn't really dug into the Rogues Gallery. He did like one Clayface story. He did one Riddler story. Penguin was in the background. Mm-hmm. The Catwoman was in the background, but these days she's kind of the star of her own book. Mm-hmm. He hasn't really gone deep into that bench. So I'm fine with him doing a one Two-Face story. He did a Mr. Freeze story in an annual. Like, if he wants to do a Man-Bat story and a Ra's al Ghul story and a Killer Croc story, like, this is the time to do it. And that book's going to alternate with Jeremy Jr. like Jock and Sean Murphy, guys that are on his level. It sounds like it's a 13-issue miniseries. Sounds like this might be his last lap. He said he may do more, but right now he's planning for it to be 13.
I was going to say, yeah, right, it's a rotating thing. But wasn't Romita's work on Superman getting kind of panned?
Yeah, but the thing is they put him on Superman, nothing can do that. But if you think of Romita objectively of his style, he's not Superman. Like, he was doing Superman like Jack Kirby was doing New Gods. And it's like, that's not quite the right fit. He's a guy that excels in street-level gritty guys.
Okay, you did not. You did not take a shot at Jack Kirby.
No, I did not take a shot at Jack Kirby. What I'm saying is,
New Gods was the bomb.
It was, but it wasn't Superman. And when Superman was in Jimmy Olsen, it wasn't Superman.
This is true.
It was its own thing. Right. So he was bringing that feel to it.
I get it.
More than like the classic Kurt Swan, even John Byrne. Right. Jan Jurgens,
right,
kind of Superman. But I think, you know, here's a guy that excels at characters like Punisher, Spider-Man. His X-Men runs were great. His Iron Man runs were great. Batman, he's only done Batman once, the Batman-Punisher crossover in the 90s.
I have that one, yeah.
I think Chuck Dixon wrote
that. Chuck Dixon, just like he wrote the other one when it was the Punisher and Batman, but Batman at that point was Azrael who turned into Batman.
It was a two-parter because back then Marvel would do one and DC would do one. And then he also did Batman Spider-Man with the Kingpin and Ra's al Ghul. Graham Nolan drew it.
Oh, okay. I don't remember. I remember the one that J.M. DeMatteis.
I've had him on the show twice and I still can't say his name.
Because he did.
It was Joker and Carnage.
Yeah.
And Bagley drew that.
Bagley drew one.
Yeah. They did another one a couple of years later with Chuck Dixon and Graham Nolan.
Oh, okay. I love Graham Nolan stuff.
I know. He's great.
Problem is, he's so right wing guy.
They both are, but they're sweet guys.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You know, I've had them both on the show and we never argued.
I would hope not.
But yeah. If you want to listen to those shows, we still have them available for download and on CaffeinatedComics.blogspot.com. We're at an hour or two, so this means it's the end of the show. You can follow me at Not On My Book on Twitter, and you can follow our Facebook page. And Elliot, you're everywhere.
At Elliot Serrano, 2 L's, 2 T's, 2 R's on both Twitter and Instagram. You can also find me on Facebook, Elliot, Facebook/Elliot.Serrano, and geektome.net.
And your comics work. What's going on comics-wise?
Grumpy Cat. My run on Grumpy Cat is in the midst right now. So you can pick up issue 1, came out a couple weeks ago. And my next story will be, I want to say, in issue number 3. And they just announced Homies, the comic.
Yeah, I saw that on Facebook.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting.
How many issues is that?
4-issue mini. I'm writing it with the creator of Homies, David Gonzalez, co-writing it with him. Doing a bunch of interesting stuff. I'm curious to see how people react to it.
Hmm.
It's a big thing. It was big in the 90s, has a very urban feel to it. It's essentially Fridays set in East LA as told through the prism of an Archie comic book. So that should be a mix. All I know is this has been a real interesting experience writing it, so I'm just curious to see what readers think.
When does the first one come out?
Not sure yet. We're still in production on issue number 1. So it's a, I don't know. I don't know. I'm not saying it's going to be, by any means am I saying it's bad.
Why would you plug something that you've done that's going to be bad?
It's going to be really different as a thing. No, this is one of those things where it's
like, come see my next show. It'll be terrible.
No, it'll be, I'm just saying it's probably going to be the most different thing you're going to see in comics right now. And that's why I'm like, I'm really excited about it, but I'm also like a little nervous. It's kind of like when you meet a girl for the first time and you want to like impress her on that first date and you think what you've got to show her is really, really cool, but you don't know how she's going to take it.
Way too many of your metaphors have been about dating.
Yeah, really. Oh, yeah, I'm on Tinder too.
That should just be your good. Follow me on Tinder. Swipe right.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take that, meatball!